Jambalaya and Justice, Personality and Pokeballs, Lengua and Love, the Help Yourself Podcast, where in every episode, Brian and Nick invite you to help yourself to bite-sized philosophy.
Welcome to Help Yourself, Food and Philosophy with Brian and Nick. I'm Nick.
And I'm Brian.
Since light travels faster than sound, people may appear bright until you hear them speak. Speaking of, what you eating, Brian?
Appear bright.
Oh, I'm kidding.
The minute that this podcast started, people were like, well, Brian's not bright. All right. Anyway,
what's worse is Nick thinks he's bright.
All right. So what am I eating? So I'm going to talk about a new thing that I tried. You actually inspired me on the last episode. You were eating Jet's Pizza, but I've been trying to find different alternatives for, you know, healthier alternatives for things like that, like pizza. It's like, I would normally get Jet's, like, we love Jet's Pizza. We'll get it. But the thing is, I know that once I eat it, it's just going to be like, yeah, I'm going to eat too much and it's a lot of bread and I'm going to, you know, have too many calories and everything else. So I've been trying to get more protein in my diet, as well as, that, as I said, try to find suitable alternatives. So they found this recipe for a high protein pizza that you can make yourself. And it's basically pretty simple stuff. It has, for the dry ingredients, it's just some self-rising flour, some coconut flour, and then some nutritional yeast, which I've never heard of before, but it's like, it smells like fish food, quite honestly. I mean, it's like, it's really like health. It smells like, you know, when you walk into the vitamin store, like the health food store, and it has that real vitamin-y smell, it smells like that. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So it's not like, yeah, so not super appetizing, but it was getting mixed into a bigger thing. So I'm like, I'm fine with it. So those are the dry ingredients. And then it has and it's all measured in grams. So I can't do like cups, but it has some egg whites in it, as well as some plain Greek yogurt. And that's the thing that gives it a little bit of the bacteria to rise, for that self-rising flour to rise. And then I'm trying to think what else. There was one other thing in there. I think that might be it. And you just mix it all up and it becomes like, it doesn't quite become a dough, but it comes like almost like a paste, and you put it on parchment paper so that it won't stick to anything. And you just use like the back of a spoon and you spread it out like into a circle, hopefully as evenly as you can. So it's like a crust.
Yeah.
And you bake it in the oven for like 10 minutes until it's sort of starting to separate from the parchment paper. And then you pull it out and you put your toppings on it, and you only have to put it back in for another like 3 or 4 minutes just to melt the cheese and stuff like that. So I had a pizza last night that was with that, crust. And then it just had regular tomato sauce, some mozzarella. I had some chicken meatballs that I cut into like slices. So I put like little slices of meatballs on it, and then pepperoni. And the whole pizza, like the whole entire pizza, is like 500 or 600 calories. So like you can eat the whole, and it's about a 12-inch pizza. So it's like, it's not like, I was actually stuck. Like, I ate the whole thing because I was like, I'm going to eat the whole thing. I'm going to eat. And I ate the whole thing and I was like, why did I eat the whole thing? This is stupid. Like, but, but it was really, really good, and it was super easy to make. You know, like I said, it was, knowing that it's a lot lower calorie than ordering from Jets or whatever. I'm trying to, like, not that I'm never going to order from Jets again, because who am I kidding? <it's> good. but so I had that, I made two separate crusts so my wife could make her own pizza, and then I could make my pizza. And it was really, really good. And apparently, actually, I think I have it. Let's see if I have it on my phone. Hold on a second. I'll pull it up right now, because I know how everyone loves it when I talk about nutritional facts of the things that I eat. So this, according to this, the whole 12-inch cheese, and this was just a cheese pizza, so mine was probably a little more than this because I added some other proteins. It has 66 grams of carbs, 12 grams of fat, and 52 grams of protein. And a plain cheese pizza is 580 calories. So if you just put cheese on it, a reasonable amount of cheese, I mean, not like half a pound, but for under 600 calories, you're getting something that's pizza. Now, I will say it's sort of like a suitable alternative, meaning I didn't feel like I ate Jet's pizza. Like, I didn't feel like I ate pizza from a pizza place, but I got the flavors of pizza and it was, it was good enough and it filled my belly. So, you know, that was good. So that's my food story for today. Really, really bad. I've got some water here that I'm drinking. And then I only have one thing, and I've talked about this before, but I'm actually sort of, for a long time, I was not drinking, you probably know this, but like for a long time, I wasn't drinking coffee at all. And then now I'm back on coffee again. Like every day I drink coffee now. And then for a long time, I didn't drink any sodas at all. Like not even diet sodas, just not because I really cared that much, but just because I got out of the habit. And when we go to the store, we don't buy them, so we don't have them in the house. And, you know, so, but anyway, somebody reintroduced me to like Coke Zero. And so I've been drinking like not a lot of Coke Zeros, but I'll say maybe like one a week, maybe two. And, you know, slippery slope, I guess. But man, they're really good. They're like, they're not diet. I tried a Diet Coke recently and it was not good at all. It was, I won't say the word that I wanted to say, but it was not how I remembered them tasting when I used to drink Diet Coke all the time. I drank it and I'm like, why would I ever drink this? This is horrible. And then you drink Coke Zero and I'm like, oh, this is really good. Like, this is like, it's like drinking a regular Coke, really. And so yeah,
if you've gone a long time without drinking Coke and you drink a Coke Zero, you're like, yeah, this is a Coke.
It really is. And I'm sure it's not good for you. I've never been a
get those artificial sweeteners. Is it sucralose or is
let's
it
see what it is.
Sorbitol or both?
It is aspartame.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's carbonated.
Isn't it the same as NutraSweet? I don't know. It's been so long since I've really looked
which at one is Splenda? Also, I think I just burped into the mic. I don't know if I burped into the mic and you heard it.
You did.
I just took a drink and then I just didn't even think about it. Just burp right into the mic. All right, guys, that's how this episode's starting out is Brian's protein pizza and burps. All right, let's go. Anyway, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like I've been like saying, hey, you know what? You deserve a Coke Zero. You can have a Coke Zero every once in a while. If I was drinking, if I was buying a Coke Zero, well, I'll say this. I only get it at the places that are not at my house. Like I don't buy them. I've not purchased a Coke Zero this entire time. It's like when I go to get my hair cut, the person who cuts my hair has a little mini fridge and she has the little 4 ounce or whatever, 6 ounce tiny cans of Coke Zero. So I drink a Coke Zero there. Both of the offices I go to, they just stock the refrigerator with Coke Zeros. And so, which is part of the reason why I also don't drink one like every day, because I feel like it's taking advantage of, I'm not buying it. So I feel like I'm like not supposed to be like just drinking them every day or whatever. I'm just for the greater
knocking
good.
Them back.
It's the greater good. The greater good.
I'm showing some temperance.
I'm showing some temperance and some courage and some, you know, just trying to, actually it's justice. It's the greater good is for me to not drink two of them a day, you know? So.
Right. But by you not getting two a day, you're exercising some restraint, right?
Right.
You're
showing exactly.
Temperance.
Exactly. So that's that's my lame BBC. But again, it's good. It's still good, even though it's lame. So what are you eating? Or what's your food story or eating? What are you talking about? What are you going to say?
I want to talk about my brunch.
Yes.
There's a restaurant. It's a Big Bad Breakfast.
Yes. BBB.
The Toastmasters Club. Oh, I just realized we didn't mention Toastmasters at all last episode, did we?
I don't think we did.
We were
exercising temperance also, you know, so.
Yeah, we'll make up for it in this one. So yeah, I got what's called the mother of all biscuits.
Oh, wow.
And it's a crispy fried dill chicken breast and cheddar cheese slice.
Okay.
On a buttermilk biscuit.
Yeah, and their biscuits are crazy.
Yeah, then I converted it into a dirty bird.
Oh.
Which means it's got some JC's hot sauce.
Okay.
Bacon and local honey. Like the honey's drizzled on top of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it was quite tasty. It hit the spot. Although it's a pretty messy sandwich at that point, right? Like you get a biscuit sandwich and you drizzle honey on top. It was put on a small plate. Like it was on a saucer plate.
Okay. Yeah.
And I really had to contend with that for a while before.
Yeah.
A fellow Toastmaster was kind enough. I didn't even think to ask for myself because I too am a nine, you know, a peacemaker on the Enneagram. But another Toastmaster could see into the kitchen and saw this huge stack of clean plates. And he's like, "Can I have one of those plates?"
Yeah.
And sure enough, this was Ed, by the way. You might as well have a crystal clear picture. And then he just took the plate and handed it to me. I'm like, "Oh, thanks."
Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't think. I did say verbally like that problem. Like, man, this is a messy sandwich for such a small plate.
Yeah.
And I did. I dropped like two or three pieces of bacon onto the table that I ate anyway because it was that good. No one else at the table knew that. That's an inside secret.
That's only for the podcast just listeners. You and me. Yeah.
Oh, and the other two people who are
right.
But it was very tasty and surprisingly filling, which I'm grateful for because I think it was like $14 for one biscuit, sides.
Those biscuits are gigantic though there, and they're like square on the bottom. I mean, it's like they just like, you know, and they're flaky. They're like those ones that are like you can peel off a little tiny layer and eat it, and then you peel off another layer and eat it, and you peel off another layer and eat it, and like that kind of
buttermilk. Is that unique to buttermilk biscuits or?
Well, I think it's the way that they make them. Like when they fold the dough over, they keep folding it over, and they fold butter into it. So like you'll like roll the stuff out, and then you literally like take butter and you put it like, you know, pats of butter so that it's like, and then you literally fold it over, and you're not like, you don't like knead it like dough, like bread dough. You roll it. So you'll put butter in the middle and then roll it.
I don't need bread dough. I can do without bread dough. Sorry,
everyone needs it anyway. So, so no, I think that's how they do it. And you know, this is just
how they dough it.
I think that's how they dough it. Yeah.
So they really milk the butter for all it's worth.
Yeah, it was you know, it was something that they had to sort of, you know, dwell on a little bit. No, but I love that restaurant though. That the first time I tried that restaurant was in what's that place called? It was like a portmanteau. Muscle Shoals, Alabama. It wasn't a portmanteau, but Muscle Shoals, Alabama. Well, it's because one of my friends said that the way you say it is Mushoals. You say it Mushoals, Mushoals. So it's like portmanteau, you know. But they had one down there in North Alabama, and we went there, and I was like, man, this place is great. In fact, I had the same thing there the very first time as I had when we went there the last time, even though I wasn't able to go to the brunch with you guys. The most recent time is the avocado toast. Their avocado toast is like so good, especially if you add egg to it. It's like a full breakfast and it's actually pretty healthy. So,
it's excellent.
But I think one of the times I might have had something like that, like the Dirty Bird or something like that. I swear when you said that, I remember, because I think we were in Muscle Shoals for a few days, and I think we went twice while we were there. And once I had a healthy breakfast, and the other one, I'm like, I'm going to get this, you know, and it's not healthy or less healthy, I should say. So, you know, I did practice temperance once and not the other time. Oh, so what are you drinking? Are you drinking anything?
Yes, I have a shaken espresso decaf with light ice from Starbucks, and it's the hazelnut. It's called like the hazelnut oat milk shaken espresso, but I made mine the hazelnut coconut milk.
Yeah.
Shaken espresso decaf with light ice.
Like for a split second when you said shaken, I thought you were going to be like a shaken, not stirred martini. And I thought you were going down the James Bond path there for a second. Anyway.
and then I have my water.
I think this podcast would be a completely different podcast if we just had cocktails while we were talking about philosophy. Be like drunk philosophy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We have had alcohol a couple
of episodes. Yeah.
On the record. I thought about it. I have some beer left over in my fridge. I'm probably not going to get, I'm not going to replenish this anytime soon.
What? Replenish the beer?
The beer. Because I just noticed, like, whenever I'm drinking beer, I don't know. I don't get anything out of it.
Yeah.
Except a bigger belly. Like,
it's interesting.
Way too much to get a buzz, and then by that point, it's too late, right? Like,
yes. I was having a conversation with friend of the podcast, Austin. Remember, Austin was on fit. You know what is it? Fitness fit. Taco. Fitness taco into your mouth or whatever. I can't remember what the title of the episode was. But I was talking to him recently and he was actually saying that same thing. Like when you decide what you're going to have to eat, ask yourself, what does this give me? What do I get from this that I'm eating? Mm-hmm. And if you, like you just said, oh, well, I get a little bit of a buzz, but I also get a belly, you know, if I drink too much beer. Then you might say, oh, maybe I shouldn't drink this beer. You know what I mean? So,
I don't always get the buzz. The beer that's around me, I don't like the flavors.
Yeah.
And I only really drink it because I want to drink something other than water, which there's so many other options between water and beer, you know? So,
yeah.
I'll just get those other options.
Just have light beer. It's basically like water, you know? It's. Anyway. No, definitely. I want you to practice temperance, and that's how we get into that's how we segue into our next topic, or next, not next topic, the same topic we were talking about, but a different portion of that topic. Yeah, so last episode we talked about where we started talking about Stoicism and the Stoic philosophers, and I think we did a pretty dang good job at it. Maybe, I don't know. It was acceptable to me. Yeah. I'm going to take it. But we talked about it and basically we're discussing the four virtues of the Stoic philosophy. And we talked about courage and justice in the last episode. This episode, we have the other two, which are temperance and wisdom. And we'll start with the basic definition of temperance. In essence, temperance is just sort of limiting yourself or, you know, not actually it's the anti-hedonist. It's sort of like what we talked about a little bit on the last episode. It was like, okay, hedonism. Well, temperance is like curbing your hedonistic, your desires or whatever, you know? So
curb your enthusiasm.
The funny thing is, I just was reading a quote right now. I was about to read a quote. It says, Epictetus said, curb your desire. Don't set your heart on so many things and you will get what you need. And Seneca said, you ask what is proper, what is the proper limit to a person's wealth? First, having what is essential, and second, having what is enough. So yeah. I guess Seneca was against billionaires then, seems like, because they have way more than is essential and they have way more than is enough, I guess, if you consider what is net and what is needed. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the Goldilocks of anything you do. You
know, yeah.
It's like too much of a good thing is still too much.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's not good anymore. At some point, mm-hmm. a good thing becomes a bad thing. Like you can poison yourself with water if you drink enough of it.
Yeah.
Like your brain will literally become waterlogged.
Right. And trying to find, there was a second thing that I had here. I feel like this is one of those things that, this is where the Aristotle quote came in in one of the articles talking about we are what we repeatedly do.
It's my favorite quote to misquote.
Yeah. Therefore, excellence is not an act, but a habit. But with regard to Stoicism, is they're saying, hey, don't do anything in excess. So doing the right thing in the right amount is the right way, or in the right way.
This is the way.
This is definitely, definitely what we're sort of talking about. But I feel like this. I mean, I said this about the other two things. You know, the other two we've already discussed. But you know, this is one of those things that I think everyone needs to know about, no matter what your philosophical belief is or anything else. Is, you know, what do you actually need to get through in life? And the thing that it reminded me of is that, I can't believe I'm like blanking on this, but it's the hierarchy of needs, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs is, mm-hmm. you know, that this is what temperance is, you know, in essence, you're like, okay, I think it somewhat parallels it because it's like, okay, do you need to have, like, what do you need? What do you actually need? Okay, you need the base, you know, the base level, then the next thing up. What's the minimum that you need to get to that level? What's the minimum that you need to get to this level? So I don't think there's nothing in Maslow's hierarchy of needs that's like, hey, once you get to, once you have shelter and security and all the things that are on like that base level, he's not like saying, yeah, but you know what you should seek once you get there is get better shelter and better security and better, you know, like, it's like, no, once you have what you need, you move to the next level. So you have a 2000 square foot house that's perfectly fine for whatever you're eating, you know, whatever you're using, or whatever you need, or 1,500, whatever that amount is that you actually need. Okay. So that level, that's, you've checked the box. You don't need anything different. But what's interesting is in our country, at least, and probably a lot of other first world countries, I would think, is that sort of the goal is to do that. The goal is, yeah, I've got this house, but now I want a bigger house, and now I want a better car, and now I want to, it's like, yeah, but you have a car, you have food in the refrigerator, you have the beer that you're not going to replenish. You know, you've got all of the things, right?
I'm smiling. Yeah.
So that's it. But I think that's, like I said, this is something that I don't think a lot of people in America practice. And I'm not pointing fingers out. I'm saying I'm in that boat just like everybody else is. I'm a consumer. So it's like, oh, I want that. I want that right now. So I'm going to get it. It's like, do you need that? No, I don't need it, but I want it, you know? So.
Yeah. I think the other aspect of temperance that the Stoics try to embody is, emotion management, right? Like anger management and, you know, just.
Which makes sense if you're talking about, you
know, not being rash and impulsive. Yeah.
And what we were talking about before, like last episode, is the demeanor of being Stoic. Actually, no, I think we were talking about that before we recorded we were talking about somebody who was talking, it was new to Stoicism, and they were saying, yeah, but are we supposed to like not have any fun? And it's like, no, they don't mean that you need to be Stoic. Like you need to be like this serious person all the time. It's different, you know, discipline to me, Stoicism in this is discipline almost like to have, cause the whole thing about Stoicism is control over your own circumstances, control over your own actions. You know, you are the master of your domain kind of thing.
Captain of your ship. Yeah.
Right. And so these four things are just that. It's, you know, they're different in terms of what, you know, how they apply, but these are all ways to basically get yourself to that point.
Ooh.
So
I bet we can make an interesting metaphor from a a car, like one of these virtues is the chassis.
Mm-hmm.
Probably what was it?
Justice.
We found that. Yeah, probably justice. That's the mm-hmm. frame. That's the structure, you know. And then
right,
you've got the accelerator of, I guess, courage.
Yeah,
the brake of temperance and the uh-huh. steering wheel of wisdom.
Yeah, I mean that's probably good.
Nailed it.
There we go. Call we back. just made it up. We just made that up. And I bet if I do a search right now for like automobile stoic reference or, you know, something, somebody else has already done it.
Or you go to ChatGPT and it's like, how are the four pillars of stoicism like a car? And it'll just,
oh, that would be awesome.
I bet it would do it.
You make me want to do that exact same thing.
Okay. Well, don't be impulsive or rash.
Yeah, exactly.
Show some discipline.
Yeah, so what was I going to say? Oh, I can't remember what I was going to say. All right. So, I mean, with regard to temperance, I feel like it sort of plays into courage a little bit, I think, just because you almost have to like temper. Because courage to me is tempering fear, right? So, you know, oh, I can't hear you for some reason.
What it's happened? Because I muted. Oh. I said, yeah, it's like kind of fear. Not doing something out of fear is the same as acting on impulse, right?
It's right, like, right.
It's the other side of that exact same coin.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I mean, there are a lot of these stoicism, you know, these modern stoics who write articles on these four pillars and everything. And they often do say that, I mean, these four pillars don't sort of stand alone, right? They're also interconnected and they yeah. do depend on each other.
Yeah. They talk about Aristotle talking about a golden mean.
Mm-hmm. So that too, the sweet spot between two vices.
Yes. Which is kinda like, interesting.
Yeah, it's not falling in the ditch of either side of the road.
Well, and I think
right in the middle of the road.
I feel like it's interesting that you described it as sweet spot between two vices, or actually, what's that?
I was quoting an article I have here.
Well, and I feel like not necessarily between two vices, but you know, a single vice. There's a certain amount, like we talked about in the last episode, you playing video games, right? Which is sort of where we got that, had that discussion about, you know, somebody thinking that you needed to be stoic, like, you know, that you were not supposed to have any fun as a stoic, right?
Sure.
But well, there's a sweet spot for your video gaming, right? So it's like potentially a single vice, like, you know, Or at least it goes mm-hmm. from a virtue to a vice if you go too far with it, right? If you don't exercise temperance. Well,
what's the opposite of playing too much?
Not playing enough? I don't know.
No, working too much.
Oh, yeah. Right? Oh, I see. I thought you meant playing video games. Yeah. But just like, what's the opposite
just
of...
just play in general. Yeah.
Right.
You know? Or the same, you know, the two vices, you know, we talk about overeating. Or eating poorly, well, then there's also just not eating enough.
Yeah.
Right? And that's another vice of sorts of, yeah.
Yeah,
various
it's just,
reasons
well,
people starve themselves.
You got to think, like, oh, and that's actually a good point, because, like, you know, in terms of just using eating as an example, is eating not eating enough, or, you know, is an eating disorder, and eating too much is also an eating disorder.
Yeah, so it's a bullseye. There's a bullseye.
Right, like, right.
You can go too far either way. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So if you're like, okay, I'm gonna not eat anything, it's like, okay, well, yeah, you have that's a problem, you know, and to its extreme causes your death, you know.
Yeah, you'll lose too much weight. Yeah.
Right. But I feel like so. Here's one of the quotes that is a Marcus Aurelius quote from Meditations. It says, "If you seek tranquility, do less." Or more accurately, do what's essential. What the logos of a social being requires, and in the requisite way. which brings the double satisfaction to do less better, because most of what we do and say is not essential. Which, wow, that's huge. Most of what we say and do is not essential. Like, yeah. That's crazy to me. That's Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, what I'm about to say is relevant to us interrupting each other. It's like, it's almost enough to inspire me to start editing our podcast. Yes, seriously. Most of what we say is not essential.
That like hurt. That actually hurts a little bit. Like, you know, he's like, because most of what we say and do is not essential. It's true. That's why it hurts, because it's so true. Yeah. You're sitting there going, you know what? You're absolutely right. Like, and a lot of things that we get stressed about and everything else, it's like not even essential. Like, what do you, why are you even, it's like you're doing it and then you're like stressed about it. You know what I mean? So yeah. Anyway.
Well, that reminds me of a Seneca quote of, man suffers more in imagination than he does in reality.
Yes. Oh yeah. 100%.
Right. Anticipating all the ways that something could go wrong as opposed to just dealing with what actually ends up happening.
So this is the last two sentences of this quote is also awesome. That same quote is, so it's, you know, I'll start with the, because most of what we say and do is not essential. If you can eliminate it, you'll have more time and more tranquility. Ask yourself at every moment, is this necessary? I think that's really cool because he gave you like practical advice in the quote where he's like, okay, anything you're doing, ask yourself, is this necessary? Do I have to do this? Is this something that is like, what happens if I don't? And then I always go into like the, this is a little bit of, hey, bingo card, Stephen Covey talks about, Stephen Covey talks about, you know, asking yourself, what happens if I don't do this thing? Like in an effort to try to determine whether you should do it, or whether he was using it as an example of you're choosing between two things. And his example was, you're actually not choosing between those two things. You're choosing between the consequences of not doing one of those things. So ask yourself, is this necessary? Or the in the alternative, what happens? Hey, good. Equal me out for the burp. Perfect.
Yeah. I was wondering if you could hear that. I didn't think about it either. That's funny.
So maybe we should start drinking if we're just going to start like just anyway.
Belching into the mic and giggling.
So what I was going to say is, so is it necessary? I feel like the question you ask, like, what happens if I don't do this? Like, what is the consequence of me not doing this thing? And I feel like that helps you get to, is this necessary? But it also helps you decide, because always when you're doing something, you're deciding whether to do this thing, or if, because if you do that thing, then you're not doing something else. So you're deciding, you're always deciding about between two things, right? So like in your case, should I play video games or should I sleep? Right?
Or should I play video games or do my taxes?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. If I don't play video games, there's not much consequence.
Right.
If I don't do my taxes, there's a lot of consequence. Or if I don't sleep, there's lots of consequence.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, honestly, you know, I do believe that if you can pare things down, as he's saying in this, that quote, you will find more tranquility. Like, and because I think a lot of the stress that we have in modern day life is self, brought on by yourself, whatever that, however that is.
Self-inflicted.
Thank you.
We suffer more in imagination than we do in reality.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we make those poor choices of not basing our decisions on actual consequence. Was it? There's now I can't think of who said it. I remember where I heard it, but it's like the last 50 or so years has been marked by a progressive exchange in people's minds and decisions of basically the culture changing their decisions of from what works to what sounds good.
Yes.
And I think part of why Stoicism has some attention now is people are getting more and more interested in what works, you know, like either the economy or corporate culture or political culture. Like so much of it's just, it's not working. It sounds good, but it's not working, you know, for people. And I think people are getting more and more interested in what will actually work.
I honestly think that in terms of like American politics, and this is, I guess I should, I don't know. I'm not going to get super political, but I honestly think that, well, it's just the, like, I see things as a pendulum. I see things in, especially in the United States, you know, things swing back and forth, and regardless of how, if you think it's the worst time in our history or the best time in our history, either one of those, if you think it, at some point it's going to be, you're going to think it's the worst time if you think it's the best now, and you're going to think that it's the best if it's the worst, if you think it's the worst now. So, you know, assuming you can live long enough, right? I don't assume, but I feel like the pendulum always swings back. And so this is going to go back to one of the other ones, but I feel like justice is always served. Like it's like self-leveling cement, right? You pour it down and you don't have to do anything to it. It will eventually level itself and it will be flat, right? And I feel like that's sort of the same thing as, you know, justice, you know, the right thing for the greater good. I think as we move forward, you know, more and more people will be entering into politics that believe that we need to do things that are for the greater good, not for the good of a certain percentage of the population or something like that. And that will swing back that direction. But anyway, I didn't mean that as a political statement. I was just saying out of, in terms of like justice being served and, you know, that type of thing. So, all right, getting back to temperance though. Maybe I should temper my comments about politics on this podcast.
Food and philosophy.
Yeah. Well, I think that's about it for temperance, unless you have anything else. I mean,
yeah, we don't want to go too far with it.
We want to use temperance in moderation, you know, if we can.
We want to do it justice.
We don't want to do anything
too far.
We don't want to do anything in excess here. So the last one, as you just alluded to, is wisdom. And, you know, it's in essence, like it's one of the things that obviously everything is striving towards. And I'm trying to find my definition here.
Yes. This is, where the Serenity Prayer comes to mind. If anyone in the audience has that familiarity, right?
I love that. Yeah. They, in fact,
oh, crud, now I'm blanking on it.
I was just going to say yesterday in our Toastmasters meeting, somebody used it.
Yeah. Gosh, I'll look that up too.
Yeah, it's like,
I know how it ends, but I'll have it.
Gosh. So,
this is the, can't do math in my head anymore and I can't remember anything anymore thanks to technology.
I'll just say, you know, wisdom is basically the essential, or sort of the final and essential virtue, right? Knowing and learning, and it's the experience to, like what this article is saying, this is the experience required to navigate the world. So we were talking about applying the other three things, like where we're struggling, and which basically means we're not that wise yet. But I think that's where wisdom, that's what wisdom is okay, now that you have,
wise crack.
Now that you know what justice is and you know what temperance is and you know what courage is, how do you apply that to your everyday life? And can you apply it on a daily basis to things? Or is it just lip service? Are you just like, oh yeah, I know these things and it's pretty cool. But you don't actually apply them. And I feel like the wisdom is the, okay, I can see how to use these things. Mm-hmm. You know, in essence, I was about to say to my advantage, but it's not really to your advantage, but so that you're a better person, so that you have less stress, so that you have, I mean, we're, what we're talking about is
use all them those to things. Justice, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
To the common good.
Well, because justice can be for you as well. And just not just, you know, like you're part of the common good, right? So as you can see, we're not very wise.
I've got the serenity prayer.
Right? So what were you going to say about that?
I was going to quote it first and just say, yeah. You know, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Courage, to change the things I can.
Mm-hmm.
And wisdom to know the difference.
Yes.
There's more to it, but that's the part that I recall.
Yeah, the wisdom to know the difference. Right. Which is sort of what we were just saying is how do you apply it? You know, is, mm-hmm. Hey, how do I tell the difference? Well, you got to have the wisdom, but that comes with time. That's one thing they never talk about in any of the self-help books or any of the philosophies or anything else is that there's a timing to everything. So it's, you know, especially in today's society where you're like, hey, I just want to do something so that I can like instantaneously be better. And it's like, well, you can do that, but wisdom doesn't happen that way. It's just, as you get older, you have perspective and you failed, you know, you have failed, you know, basically many times. So you've learned from those things, or you've seen others fail and you've learned from those, and that gives you the wisdom. Right. But I mean, for lack of a better way to describe it, it's interesting to me that if many of the religious figures that we have are, you know, that are for many of the major religions, they're basically the ideal, or like what people say is like, hey, they've achieved wisdom. Like, you know, they've achieved what, you know, the ultimate in wisdom is, right? Is that they like are all knowing kind of, they, you know, are, you know, the teller of the truth. You know what I mean? If you go to, like, if you, you know, if you have any of that, like, and then some of those is like, and that's why they're worshipped, you know, in some ways is
sure
they've gotten the wisdom. And so you're like, okay, well, maybe if I read about this person and study this person my whole life, then I'll get some of that wisdom too. So
like, I don't know who he's quoting. I tried to find the quote, but John C. Maxwell.
Yeah.
Says, it's said that a wise person learns from his mistakes. A wiser one learns from others' mistakes.
Yeah.
And he goes on to say the wisest person of all learns from others' successes. But I disagree because of the survivorship bias. And you and the audience are encouraged to look it up. Otherwise, it's a tangent. It's.
Yeah.
Just the short of it is you don't. You don't really know what makes someone successful until you rule out who that's failed has also tried those same tactics and just still didn't win.
Yes.
So like, if all you do is study success, you won't actually know what contributes to success unless you also study failure. You look for disconfirming anyway, but a wiser person learns from other people's mistakes.
Yeah. Well, and I found the quote that I was looking for that, sort of takes us a little bit further. So this is under the wisdom section in one of these articles, and it's a quote from Epictetus. It says, the chief task in life is simply this, to identify and separate matters so that I can clearly to myself, say clearly to myself, which are externals not under my control and which have to do with the choices I actually control. Where then do I look for good and evil? Not to uncontrollable externals, but within myself to the choices that are my own. So, you know, the wisdom, like mm-hmm. you said, sort of wisdom to be able to tell the difference between the two. But also, I like that this is sort of sums up all of Stoicism, because Stoicism is a, you know, a philosophy that is really, as I said at the very beginning of the last episode, is you're in control. Like, you're the one that is sitting here going, okay, how do I, like, basically, what do I have that I have control over? And this is saying that exact thing is, hey, in essence, don't worry about things you don't have control over because you don't have control over them.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I get the concept, and I use the same terminology, you know, on any given day. But I also don't like the word control to some extent. I think I prefer influence.
Okay.
Partly because, one, I tend to see things in a spectrum and not black and white, binary, control or can't control, on or off.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, yes, pragmatically, we can control our arms and our hands. You know, we can articulate our body.
Right.
At the same time, there's things that we do that we don't understand. Or there's people who lose control of their body. We don't exactly, like, tell each muscle consciously to move in which way. It just sort of does what we want, and we're not even sure how that works, right?
Like, yeah.
We don't have full control of our body.
Right.
But we influence what it does. And similarly, like, we don't have, even if we have, like, I'm at a position where I have direct reports, but I don't control them. Right.
Right.
Like, I influence them. Hopefully through a combination of, you know, authenticity and authority. And I guess one of my big eureka moments and all of that is, like, yeah, I can't make anybody do anything.
Right.
But I can make it easy. You know, like, knowing that in the article that I have here, before they even get to the four pillars, they have this little blurb that talks about a couple of principles. I'm not sure if this is stoic necessarily, because it's outside of the four pillars. Like, it might just be this author's opinion. But he or she says, you know, first, we behave to advance. These are, what is it? It's just the Stoics believe that humans are social animals and are able to use reason to solve problems, and that this instinct naturally developed throughout life, beginning in childhood, and is the basis for ethics. And so it can be analyzed in three parts. The first is we behave to advance our self-interest. Second, we recognize that other people also have interests.
Yeah.
And third is we work out how to solve problems in life that arise from the friction from those first two principles.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's like you and I are stuck together in the same boat. I want to go north and you want to go south. We're both trying to get to land. How do we reconcile that? Right. We happen to have the same goal, but we have a different approach of how to get there.
Yeah.
And if, like, I could make it easy for you, I could say, you know what? I will row twice as much as you if you go north with me. Right.
Yeah.
Like, so there's, I'm not controlling you. You still have a choice. You're like, no, I believe so much that it's south. And at that point, based on your conviction, maybe you convince me. But
yeah.
Ultimately, in a survival situation, though, it's better to just make a decision and pick a direction. And
go. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Like, but the control and not control there is, okay, you know, do I have control over whether I live or die? It's like, yeah, I do. And, you know, whether I live or die is, like, making it back to land is a big, you know, a big factor in whether I live or die. Right. So, but I get your point though. I get the point of, you know, you're right. You can't control, but I feel like I always liked the way that Wayne Dyer talked about, and he may have been quoting someone else, but I think he actually was, I think he was quoting, like, an Indian, philosopher or spiritualist or something like that. And he said, yeah, he always said, hey, you know, why do people worry? Because if there's only two things that you can worry about, one is things you have control over and one is things you don't have control over. So if you have control over it, why are you going to worry about it? Because you can do something about it. If you don't have any control over it, then why are you going to worry about it? Because you don't have any control over it. So now you've just eliminated all things to worry about. Right.
Yeah.
And so I feel like part of this wisdom is going back to, you know, going back to courage a little bit and maybe even temperance a little bit, is that you're, you know, that they're, and that, and I guess sort of the name of Stoic, you know, basically, hey, you know, because the ultimate goal of this is to be metered, is to be, you know, to be able to live life in a very fluid way, if that makes sense. That is not, you don't feel like you're along for a ride. You're able to make decisions about it. But also, I really believe that at the base level of most philosophy, self-help, and everything else, even religions, is stress relief, is not worrying about certain things, not worrying about your death, not worrying about what's going to happen if this happens. And again, it goes back to your quote that you said. It's like, what was the quote? Say it again. It was it's something in your mind. Like you're more,
we suffer more in our imagination than we right. do in reality.
So yeah. I think a lot of these things, like I said, including religions and everything else, is a way to find peace, is a way to find some kind of, you know, inner peace. I mean, and right. obviously a lot of religions use that. So
to quiet the existential anxiety.
Yes.
Yes.
And I think we've talked about that before in one of our podcast episodes, at least. Oh.
existential anxiety.
I think it was when we were talking, about like solipsism or something, you know, like, you know, basically like something like that, like it's like existential crisis kind of stuff. No, but I think that, I think that's sort of the, you know, to not to put like a total cap on it, but like, you know, I feel like.
Or bust a cap on it.
Or bust, exactly. you know, having that, you know, having the wisdom is, in some ways, like, think about this, and you can do this out there. Don't close your eyes if you're driving, but think about this. If you think of someone who you think is wise, like, just think of that person and picture their demeanor. Do they seem like they're stressed out? I have a hard time believing that if you look at somebody or you think, like, I think that's one of the wisest people I know, part of the reason why you think they're the wisest person is because they're so calm, they're metered, they just don't get rattled by a lot of things. They're just sort of, you know, one of the people, I'll use his name too, because he was a member of our, I don't know if I should use his like first and last name, but he was a member of our Toastmasters Club. Unfortunately, he passed away, but he, and you probably know who I'm talking about, and he never... I never felt like he was rattled by anything. I felt like he was just going through life and just sort of like, even when he spoke in front of an audience, he spoke the same as when he was having a conversation with you. And
just a nice, slow, very metered,
did not seem nervous at all. Did not use a lot of ahs and ums and all these other things. Like, didn't seem like literally none, pretty much.
A friend to all.
Yeah. Yes. And the thing is, you know, I feel like he had a certain amount of wisdom because of that, and, you know, he's a pretty highly educated guy, but grew up in very, very, how do I say it? Like very, you know, he grew up in a rural area and was, you know, I don't think there was a lot of money. Like, I don't think his family's very wealthy or anything like that, but they, again, you don't need a lot of money to be wise, right? Anyway, it's just interesting to me that sort of goes together, you know?
Yeah, for me, when you were talking about asking me to picture someone who's wise, like, I also got the same kind of calm, cool, and collected vibe. Maybe a couple of crow's feet, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But also, the story that just popped in my head is that he or she's seen almost all of it already, or seen it all before, right? Like, maybe they could still be young and wise, but it's like they've lived a life, right? They've traveled the world, or they've recognized the pattern faster than other people have.
Mm-hmm.
But they've seen it all before. They recognize it.
Yeah.
And so it's not a surprise. It's not scary.
Well,
and it's probably because they've done some thinking about it, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, I think definitely the more time you have to reflect on things, the more time you have the ability to gain wisdom. And I think, again, going back to religion, you know, the reason why prayer or meditation is part of almost all the religions, I would think. That's on some level. I think pretty much all. I don't know all the religions backwards and forwards, but all of them have some kind of prayer or some kind of meditation that are built into that, that is either required or, you know, hey, you need to do this. You sort of have, you know, heavily encouraged, right? And I think part of that is that reflection process of, you know, being able to sort of calm the mind and, you know, things like that. So I think, yeah. So unless you have anything else, I'll read this quote that I found that I feel like sums up all of the four virtues of Stoicism. And it was Marcus Aurelius.
Help yourself.
It's from the Meditations. Yeah, help yourself. So it says, this is Marcus Aurelius from Meditation, says, when you wake up in the morning, tell yourself, the people I deal with today will be meddling, ungrateful, arrogant, dishonest, jealous, and surly. They are like this because they can't tell good from evil. But I have seen the beauty of good and the ugliness of evil, and have recognized that the wrongdoer has the nature related to my own, not of the same blood and birth, but of the same mind and possessing a share of the divine. And so none of them can hurt me. No one can implicate me in ugliness, nor can I feel angry at my relative or hate him. We were born to work together like feet, hands, and eyes, like the two rows of teeth, upper and lower. To obstruct each other is unnatural. To feel anger at someone, to turn your back on him, these are unnatural. So anyway, all of that, that goes into the courage, and that goes into, you know, justice, temperance, wisdom, all of those things. And I thought, honestly, if you read that every morning, you might actually be better off if you just read that, like, sort of like, you know, the prayer of Assisi, Saint Assisi. You know,
it seems rather bleak at first, and then it just does some lip service to, like, I also have that same nature, but.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I like it too, but I think it's bad. You have to say, like, yeah, everyone's going to be horrible. Everyone I meet today is going to be horrible. They're going to be arrogant, and they're going to be meddling and dishonest and jealous. And, well, you know,
it comes down to lowering your expectations so much.
Yeah.
That there's no room for disappointment and frustration, and there's only room for being pleasantly surprised.
Right, right.
Like, oh, hey, only two people cut me off today. That's amazing. People are always so self-centered. I'm surprised it didn't happen more often.
So if you've gotten nothing else from these two episodes, it's just lower your expectations, okay?
Raise your expectations of yourself, lower expectations of
everybody else. All right. Well, I think we covered that pretty well. At least we got through the four topics. I'm sure that we probably just scratched the surface. But hey, that's what this podcast is about, scratching the surface. So, all right. Bye.
Picking the scabs.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. Catch all the latest from Help Yourself, you can follow on Instagram at Help Yourself the Podcast. And to contact Brian and Nick, email helpyourself@brynick.com. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.